And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 18th, 2021. Well, in Washington, D.C., it's August, and if you've ever been into the D.C. area in August, you know it's hot, humid, pretty quiet. All of Congress has gone home. They've taken the August break off. And things seem quiet, but they're not. There's a lot going on, a lot to discuss, and a lot for climate activists, for climate hawks to keep track of. And what I thought we'd do is take a brief and a brief tour of the kind of stuff that's going on. Just to keep everybody apprised of what's happening, because there's important stuff happening. It's happening behind the doors. You may want to take action and call your congressperson to urge them to do the right thing. We'll put up links to how you can do that. But I wanted to go back to the history of what's called a reconciliation bill. You probably heard of it. But here you'll get a brief summary of what's all going on there. So, as we just saw in the last few weeks, the IPCC report says basically that we've run out of time to address climate change. Must happen now, right? So, if you're listening to this show, you probably agree with that. We don't need to revisit the urgency of taking action. What is new in the world is that the President of the United States, Joseph Biden, is on board with taking big action, right? That's a good thing. But of course, that his goal of taking big action runs into the buzzsaw of Washington, D.C. opposition. So let's just think for a minute what's happened there. Sometime earlier in the spring, Biden proposed a bill that I think was called the American Jobs Plan that had a huge amount of stuff in it, from climate to broadband infrastructure to treating child care as infrastructure to changing Medicare, all kinds of things. Huge price tag. Of course, the people like Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and of course Mitch McConnell got in the way. Right? They did not want to call child care infrastructure because that just didn't set well with their. Anyway, so what happened with Biden, because he wants to be perceived as bipartisan, went into good faith negotiations with these people and ended up basically cutting out of the jobs plan essentially all of the new stuff. And the only thing that remained were money to fix bridges, right? Because that's what these guys can get their head around, right? So what's come out of this is something called the Bipartisan Infrastructure Plan, which basically is a sort of 1950s approach to infrastructure, right? Build more highways, build more bridges. There's a little bit of stuff on climate in there, but basically most of the climate stuff got gutted out. And you can critique that bipartisan infrastructure bill a lot of ways. I mean, I think the way I see it is that, you know, it wasn't really bipartisan in the sense that the two parties are the progressives and the conservatives. And what happened is all the moderates who want to protect corporate interests all got together and pretended they were pals because some of them were Democrats and some of them were Republicans, et cetera, et cetera. Long and short, the bipartisan infrastructure bill has certainly some good, worthwhile stuff in it to improve our infrastructure. And because of Biden's wisdom, that bill passed the Senate, right? It got through this famous filibuster thing that requires 60 senators, that is to say at least 10 Republican senators to get on board. It got through that, passed the filibuster, and in fact, this bipartisan infrastructure bill that cut out all the climate stuff, that actually was passed by the Senate. Super. So what happens to that bill is that now it gets sent back to the House of Representatives, because you remember the Senate and the House have to agree and both vote on the exact same language for something to happen, right? So now the House has to reconsider what the Senate did, and that'll come up later. But the other thing that the Senate did was to set in process something you've probably also heard about called reconciliation, where they sent the committees of the Senate out to write a bill. So the bill doesn't actually exist yet, but there is people trying to write it, include things. So that's why we want to get our discussion, our points into this discussion, because the bill is being written as it stands. So what does this mean? So the way it's worked is that the party of delay, right, sort of the moderate and Republicans, have passed a bill that includes roads and bridges, but the progressives have put all of their faith and all of their new ideas into this, what's called a reconciliation bill. Okay, so this is going to include a huge amount of stuff that includes, you know, child care as infrastructure, that includes changes to Medicare. I mean, all kinds of good stuff into this bill, including climate stuff, which is what we want to discuss here. Anyway, the bottom line is that Senate's working on a bill they would pass that would then go back to Pelosi in the House, right, to pass some kind of a bill. And the reconciliation process is such that you don't need the 60 vote threshold, right? You can vote entirely with Democratic votes plus Vice President Harris, right? You get 51 votes, 50 plus one. And so we should not be afraid of the reconciliation process, because the reconciliation process is what they use to pass the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, right? That was a reconciliation bill. The $2 trillion tax cut that the former guy got through was also a reconciliation bill. And it's called reconciliation because you're somehow reconciling the budget. So the bill has to have, all these bills have to have something to do with money, right? Budgetary money. And that's why you can pass it without going through the filibuster. Right, so this is a big vehicle. I think it's important to note that the current price tag for the reconciliation bill is $3.5 trillion over 10 years. Okay. That's $350 billion per year. And what you will hear is a lot of screaming and shouting about the deficit and how terrible such kind of expenditures would be for the deficit. But it's a topic unto itself, but that whole question about the deficit is a myth. I'll put up a link to a book called The Deficit Myth. I mean, the bottom line is the U.S. can print money and manage inflation. And this question about deficits is a false argument. I mean, you should keep in mind that the $2 trillion tax cut that the former guy pushed through was sold under the false promise that it would pay for itself. And it has not, that $2 trillion has not hurt the economy. And I guess I would also, with a heavy heart, point out that we spent $2 trillion over 20 years in Afghanistan, and you can see how much value we get out of that. Point being that a $3.5 trillion price tag over 10 years is not a deficit threat, and we should not use that excuse to prevent ourselves from addressing the climate issue. This reconciliation bill, which of course is still being written, right? It does not exist. But there are certainly strong proposals as to what should go into the bill. And that's what I thought we would talk about a little bit. So the reconciliation bill that's floating out there, which is now a parallel bill to the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and essentially would complete the progressive agenda by having the bipartisan infrastructure bill plus the reconciliation bill. So they both have to pass, right? That reconciliation bill has climate stuff in it, and so let's tick them off. One of the things that one of the goals that Biden has set for the United States is to reach 80% clean energy by 2030. Right? So what that means is that we have to replace a lot of coal plants, build a lot of windmills and solar panels. I mean, all that technology that we've talked about in the past, all that has to happen. And what the reconciliation bill is trying to do is find a credible pathway to make all that happen. Right? And so one of the very effective ways to do that is to provide tax credits to people who put up renewable energy systems like windmills and solar panels. Right? The tax credits are oftentimes the element in the financing of the, say, the wind turbine, the wind farm out in the ocean. There's the tax credits that make it plausible and where you can make money. Okay. And so, but the problem is the tax credits typically have been like 1 or 2 year extensions. Congress is very parsimonious in the handing out these production tax credits, as they're called, the PTC, production tax credit, for renewable energies. What the reconciliation bill would do would be extend that for at least 10 years so that people have a long time horizon to build things and have confidence that they can use this tax credit in their calculation of the financial viability of these renewable energy systems, right? So that's an important thing to do. It's got to be in the package, and there's that. We should note as an aside that this is, since we're talking about taxes and essentially subsidies, that part of this bill should cut the subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, right? Which, again, is a big topic. But lots of money goes from the U.S. federal government to subsidize the exploring for oil and yada, yada, yada. Fossil fuel industry has had 100 years of wheedling out of Congress special tax favors. Those need to be taken out in this reconciliation bill. Kill the subsidies for fossil fuels, advance tax credits, and help to the renewable energy industry. Okay. So that's one big chunk of the reconciliation bill. A second big chunk of the reconciliation bill, and probably the most important, is right now it's called the Clean Energy Payment Program, CEPP. And the background on this is that many states, including Massachusetts, have what's called a Renewable Portfolio Standard, the RPS. We've talked about it on this show before. Here in Massachusetts, the RPS recently, with the climate roadmap bill passed here in Massachusetts, called for an increase of 3% per year in the amount of renewable energy that the utilities have to provide here in Massachusetts. And the way the utilities get those satisfy that renewable portfolio standard is by getting credits, buying credits from renewable energy systems. And of course, that encourages the development of new renewable energy systems in order to satisfy the demand. Well, so the renewable portfolio standard is basically requiring utilities to have a certain level of clean energy in their portfolio. That's been extended at the federal level. And near as I can understand, at the federal level, instead of doing the solar renewable energy credits that are used in Massachusetts, they're doing something called the Clean Energy Power Plan, which essentially would be a set of direct payments to utilities if they have more clean energy according to a schedule, right? X percent per year. They'd get a payment from the federal government. If they don't make that number, then they have to pay a penalty, right? So it's a carrot and stick approach that involves direct payments from the federal government to the utilities to encourage them to change and get more clean energy. And that is seen as the most effective path to getting to 80% clean energy by 2030. Turns out these kinds of renewable portfolio standards as a concept, it's also called a clean energy standard, CES. I mean, so much jargon here. The CES, the clean energy standard, is wildly popular across the country, across political divides. It's a way to push clean energy into the system, and the reconciliation package basically does that at a national level. So what the state of Massachusetts is doing is reflected in similar ways at the national level that pushes all of the utilities across the country to go to clean power. Okay? Another part of this reconciliation package is to encourage electric vehicle manufacturer charging stations, all of the infrastructure around electric vehicles. We recently have been posting a podcast about lithium, which of course is needed for the batteries in electric vehicles, but decarbonizing our transportation system is a good thing. Right? Figuring out how to do it properly is part of this, is you know, open question we need to work on, but this bill encourages the use of electric vehicles and has targets like half the vehicles sold in the country by 2030 are EVs. Right? The other thing the bill does is support installation of heat pumps, basically. So heat pumps are essentially air conditioners that can run in reverse. They can pump heat into your house. They can take heat out of your house, just the way, air conditioners can. I mean, air conditioners are one-way heat pump, right? So it's not a scary technology. But using that to heat homes across the country is a major step forward. And for the federal government to be actively encouraging that with subsidies and payments is a good thing. Another part of the bill, again, this is all in discussion, this is all what needs to be advocated for, is the idea of something called a civilian climate core. Okay, so this is an idea that echoes the 1930s New Deal, which had the Civilian Conservation Corps, which basically offered well-paying jobs to people to do good stuff, to build the national. In the 1930s, they were building the national parks. In this day and age, it would be people helping to install those heat pumps, planting trees. I mean, there's all kinds of climate-related activities that could be undertaken by the federal government and pay people to do it. So this is where these jobs come in. And the civilian climate core idea is very important as a path forward, because of what it does is it provides jobs. And if you start thinking about it, you know, if you're paying $15 an hour to be in the civilian climate core, that's what you're getting paid, I'm sorry. In contrast to the 1930s, where the Civilian Climate Corps was like all men, all white men, right? In this day and age, we can offer these kinds of good-paying jobs across the spectrum to all people. And that's a key point, is that these jobs are not held by the usual folk, but that everyone gets an opportunity to be involved. And that brings us to so the Civilian Climate Corps is a major good idea in the reconciliation package. Finally, there are clear calls that whatever is done under this heading, right, in this reconciliation package has to take into account environmental justice. There's this perverse thing that because we're talking about least cost, clean electricity, yada, yada, yada. Oftentimes what happens, that rebounds, that the places that already have the dirtiest power plants get used more, right? That's this weird thing. And those places that already have the coal plants are typically environmental justice communities. And so you don't want to be encouraging further burdens on environmental justice communities by the things that we're doing under the Reconciliation Act. That needs to be taken into account. The leaders are conscious of this, There's ways around it, and we need, as climate activists, to be supporting that kind of work. So that's some of the stuff that's in the reconciliation bill. I would not say that's everything. It's so big and it's so fast moving, I can't pretend to have captured it all. But you need, if you're listening, you should be paying attention. Hopefully what we've said here provides a little bit of insight so that when you hear the words, you'll know what the Civilian Climate Corps is, or the Clean Energy Payment Plan. So what's going to happen now? Well, as it stands right now, we're mid-August. The bill is being somehow written by committees in the Senate. Nancy Pelosi is holding the bipartisan infrastructure bill, right? And her belief, I think, is that because all those quote-unquote moderates want the bipartisan infrastructure bill, that's the leverage to get them to pay, to vote for reconciliation. So Nancy Pelosi is talking about holding both bills until the Senate passes a reconciliation bill, and then the House can act on it. But I think that Pelosi does not want to give away what leverage she has by agreeing to this bipartisan infrastructure bill and then have Mitch McConnell, you know, pull a Lucy and Charlie Brown kind of thing, right? But at the same time, there are Democrats underneath Pelosi's caucus who are not so happy with that kind of delay. So if you're you're a member of Congress, your representative needs to hear from you that you want a strong climate bill and you want it to happen. I mean, the exact method of passage doesn't matter so much to us climate hawks, but it seems like you don't want to give away your leverage before you get what you want. It's not a political thing, right? So there you go. What we'll do is we'll put up links to some of the topics we've talked about here. There's lots out there to read. We'll put up some of the links at the blog is at massclimateaction.org/blog. Included in that will be how to contact your member of Congress to urge them to vote for a strong climate component in the reconciliation package. If you have questions about email or suggestions of things that we ought to be doing, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to us on your smartphone using all the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to us on theirs. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. So we have to insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and if necessary, a price on carbon that respects environmental justice standards. We need to do this in order to safeguard our collective future. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.